This is Caroline Cape, and today I'll be interviewing Anthony Tony Wilhoit at the Department of Public Advocacy in Frankfort, Kentucky. It is July 6, 2012, and in this interview with Mr. Wilhoit, we will be discussing the history of the Department of Public Advocacy, as well as his involvement and experiences as the first public advocate within the agency. When did you serve as public advocate, and how did you become the first public advocate?
Actually, it was public defender then.
Okay. Okay, we need to know that.
There was no office of public advocate, it was office of public defender. And I was appointed by Governor Ford in 1972.
Okay.
The governor appointed from a list of five nominees, and these were furnished by the Kentucky State Bar Association. He went to the governor, and he chose his pick out of those five. I served from 72 till late 74, so a couple of months longer than 2 years, I guess.
And what made you decide to take on that responsibility?
Well, I was interested in it. In private practice, of course, as a young lawyer back then, mm-hmm. you got appointed to defend indigent people charged with crimes, and usually it was the younger members of the bar. That's how, I guess, you earned your stripes.
Yeah.
I had seen that maybe wasn't the best way in the world to provide defense for indigent people.
Yeah.
And I remember a good friend of mine who was my same age. We were out of law school together. And I remember he had to take 2 whole weeks out of his law practice, which he needed desperately to do. I mean, mm-hmm. he was like me. We were living from paycheck to paycheck, essentially,
yeah.
And because he'd been assigned a murder case. I did a great job, but that made me think. Then later, I became a police judge, and that's kind of the equivalent of what a district judge is now. And I got to see every Monday morning all these criminal defendants, and some of whom, if they had just been able to afford lawyers, might have gotten a better deal than they did. Then I became county attorney. Interested in it then. We got a roster system going in Woodford County. I approached the circuit judge about that and even got the older lawyers on it, mm-hmm. the more experienced lawyers. And I remember one lawyer, gracious old gentleman, and I kept the roster for the circuit judge. And his name came up, and he came to court and bowed to the judge and said, "If Your Honor, please, I haven't handled a criminal case in over 20 years, mm-hmm. but I will be happy to pay one of these young men to do it out of my own pocket." So, you know, things like that made you think there's got to be a better way. And I had nothing to do with the passage of this legislation, but I was very interested in it when it did pass. And I had talked to some people and some friends, and I was just interested, thinking maybe I could get this thing going with my experience. And part of my experience as county attorney was I helped the county treasurer prepare the budget every year. So I was kind of familiar with budgets and how to prepare budgets and how to run departments and things. And I thought, well, maybe I could do this. Mm-hmm. And Governor Ford agreed, for better or for worse.
So once you was appointed, what was your overall vision for the program?
Well, I guess my vision was, coming out of the practice of law and with my background, was to make the public defender's office and offices, I mean, and participating organizations, the best criminal defense law firm in Kentucky. Hmm. And that's what I tried to run it like, a law firm.
Who was the key players, like, in the criminal justice system at that time? Like, main judges, I guess, and
well, certainly the judges, the old Kentucky Court of Appeals, very influential then, and the Chief Justice, the circuit judges were very key players in the criminal justice system, and the prosecutors.
Who was the Chief Justice and the Attorney General?
The Chief Justice then was Was it Judge Palmore when we first started? I believe he was. And Judge Reed later, or vice versa. I can remember.
I think
Palmore was when I was sworn in, Judge Palmore, because he spoke at our first conference.
Do you recall who the Attorney General was?
Ed Hancock, I believe, was the Attorney General.
Who were the political supporters and enemies of the public, the new public defender program?
Well, the principal supporter of the new public defender program was Governor Ford. And back in those days, that was a pretty big stick. And then, surprisingly, a lot of prosecutors and a lot of judges. And I can't say that we had any true enemies. We had people who didn't understand, and you had to educate them. And the common complaint I got as I went into all the counties was, well, why should we pay our tax money to defend criminals? You know, there are a lot of kids need feeding. People can't afford to go to school. Why is this money going to defend criminals? So that was the attitude you had to overcome. I can't say there were any real enemies.
How did you respond to that?
Well, I've told you, I think, before. When Governor Ford appointed me, they swore me in Louisville. And we sat down immediately thereafter, and he told me, the bad news is you got to get this system up and running in 90 days.
Wow.
And that was from him. Actually, the mandate of the Court of Appeals, which had ordered the new system, had not come out yet, but he wanted it done in 90 days. So I hit the road pretty soon thereafter. But I would go to fiscal courts and to try to get officials from the towns and cities, too, where we might be able to get money from them to supplement the money we had, because probably we didn't have enough money. Well, we didn't to run the whole system. But the way it was back then, for each circuit judge in a judicial district, the state allotted $14,000. So if you had one circuit judge, say, for three counties, then they had $14,000. It was my job to get into those three counties in that district, raise more money, and get a program going in that county. I can remember when I appeared in Pulaski County, and I made my spiel to the fiscal court, and that was the very first question that came up. Hand went up. Mr. Will Hoyt, why should we pay tax money to defend criminals when we've got so many other problems in Pulaski County? And I started to answer. I said, well, Squire, and with that, Hal Rogers, who was the Commonwealth attorney, spoke up. And he said, what it boils down to is, I can't prosecute them if Mr. Will Hoyt can't defend them. And then I went on with my usual spiel about, you know, we're in law enforcement too. I've been in law enforcement almost all the time I've practiced law. And, of course, I guess you're in law enforcement when you practice law. And our end of it is nobody ought to go to jail or prison or be punished unless they're proven guilty beyond reasonable doubt. The Commonwealth's job is to prove guilt beyond reasonable doubt, and you have to have both of us, and that's how our laws are enforced. And I have to say, I didn't run into any enemies anywhere and found the counties very cooperative. The people, you just needed to educate them. And once they realized, well, this is pretty necessary, we did okay. We did okay. And we had it up and running in the time the governor had given us. But I'll never forget, I was coming back from Western Kentucky. I'd been out, and it was the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. And I'd gotten flu or something. And I was up chucking and stopping the car. And then I finally rolled my overcoat up and put it up against the window of the car and drove home. I got home about 2 o'clock in the morning. That was the most miserable Thanksgiving I ever spent. Fortunately, no fiscal courts were meeting the next day or the following Saturday, so I didn't have to get back on the road again until Monday.
What kind of programs, organizational decisions, major ones did you make while you was public defender?
Well, I guess the basic decisions, when I was sworn in, I was it. We didn't have, there was no staff, no secretary, no telephone. Governor Ford provided us with offices in the Capitol then. We had on the front end of the Capitol on the opposite side from the governor's mansion. We had a set of rooms back there. I think there were two great big rooms, and we kind of divided in one. So my first job was to hire some people. And in the process of being screened by the bar, I had run into a bar attorney. Back then, the bar, so Kentucky Bar Association, consisted of Henry Harned, who was the director, a secretary, and Bill Ayer, I believe. There may have been one other lawyer in there. And Bill Ayer, I immediately hired him because he knew his way around, and he impressed me as being a sharp young lawyer. I got on the phone that same day and called David Merle, whom I had worked with when I was county attorney. Dave back then was working for the attorney general. And when I had tough legal questions about criminal law, they would always put me on with David, whom I had known in law school. Mm-hmm. But I was impressed with the phenomenal knowledge he had of criminal law and procedure, so that was one guy I wanted to get. And I think at that time he was maybe working for Apple Red or just left there, but I was able to get him. So I started out with Bill Ayer and David Merle. Me and two great secretaries.
And Mr. Ayer and Mr. Merle, did they have specific roles that they played themselves?
Well, I asked David, because of his experience in the Attorney General's office and handling appeals down there, lots of them, to set up our appellate section, because the statute directed that we would handle criminal appeals for local lawyers, just like the Attorney General did for prosecutors. Now, local lawyers could still handle their own appeals if they wanted to, and they would receive some compensation, but not much. But none of them did, for a lot of reasons. And it was a good system, because if you had to go after the local prosecutor, it was a lot easier to have those guys in Frankfort do it than this lawyer down there who's going to be working with that same prosecutor. And there was a different attitude among members of the bar back then from what I see now. There was more collegiality, and, you know, we're professionals, and it's not us versus you. We're in this thing together. We're all in law enforcement. And we're going to do our thing, you do your thing, we understand, and you understand what we have to do. And I can't say that now it's, you know, it's if you don't agree with me, you're evil. It permeates our politics and everything else.
What were the, I guess, the funding and workload realities during your term?
Well, the funding was, I guess you could say it was adequate. It was, from my experience, I knew. For example, not too awful long after I took the job, somebody told me I should go to the National Legal Aid and Defenders Association meeting, and that I could pick up a lot of stuff. And I did pick up a lot of stuff. But one thing I picked up there that I saw right away, that was not going to work in Kentucky, was they were pushing full-time public defenders everywhere. And I knew that was not practical for our situation. And we were allowed to go into the counties and get groups of lawyers to agree to take all the criminal defense for a certain amount of money. And in that way, they would submit plans to me for the defense of all the indigent folks. And I would have to approve the plan. You would be amazed, for example, one of the best plans devised was devised by Jim Chenault, a circuit judge over in Madison County, whom a lot of people later thought, well, that guy is so antagonistic to public defenders. He was not. You just had to know him. He was very demanding. But he and his former law partner, who was one of the outstanding criminal defense lawyers in the state, devised this plan, which I used a lot of places. And people like this were very supportive. I didn't go into a single county where the circuit judge was not extremely supportive. And I remember going one time, and there was still a cotton gin, one last cotton gin in Kentucky. And I was in far west Kentucky, and I remarked to the circuit clerk that this is more like Mississippi than Kentucky. And she said, well, honey, we're closer to the capital of Mississippi than we are to Frankfort. And the old circuit judge down there, just the most gracious gentleman ever, most supportive. And he told me, he said, Mr. Will Hoyt, our lawyers here try to do a really good job, but these young boys, they need help. They need help.
Was this Hancock County?
No, this was what's the far west one on the Mississippi River, right there in the Purchase area, Fulton. Shoot, I remember every county. I went to all 120 counties, I don't want to do that again. But anyway, I realized right away you couldn't go to full time people. Number one, if you did that, you're paying Social Security, you're paying retirement. You're paying a secretary, you're paying office rent. If you could get lawyers who are already doing that thing to come into it. Not only that, I tried to get the best senior criminal lawyers in the counties in the plan, and they could kind of mentor the younger guys. And we hoped in this way we would not only provide the best criminal defense, but we would improve the practice of criminal law in Kentucky, and I think we were able to accomplish that pretty markedly. And one thing we used to laugh about was back in the old days, so many appeals, the Court of Appeals had the way out, question not preserved for error, and we made doggone sure that the question was going to be preserved for error. And then we started the training program, and everybody that participated in the system would come to the training program free, didn't cost you anything, and we would get some of the best lawyers in criminal law to come speak, not only locally here in the state, but outside lawyers. I remember we got Francis Bellotti, who later became the Attorney General of Massachusetts. But he was an expert on breathalyzers in defending drunk drivers cases. Well, it's after that, all of a sudden, in drunk driving cases, you know, they knew to ask, well, have you calibrated that machine? When did you calibrate it last? Have you done this? You know, the prosecutor, whoa, where did they find out all this? So I think it really did improve the practice of law. And at the same time, very few successful 1142s filed. Very few. And I later did a study, and this may have been when I was on the public defender, what's the commission? I was on the Court of Appeals, and I was briefly...
Public Advocacy Commission.
Yeah. And we kind of did a little study, and it was so much cheaper, although the system went the other way, and I understand why. But it was still so much cheaper to provide defense through these plans and the local lawyers, who, by the way, knew the prosecutors, knew the jurors and things, rather than bringing folks in here from New Jersey and stuff looking for jobs. But it still cost almost three times as much to defend one person where you had the full-time people as it did where you had the part-time.
Well,
more than three times. And there was no evidence of any more successful 1142s or any worse defense. In fact, prisoners in jails probably got visited more often under the old system. But I realize things have changed and it's different.
Mm-hmm. Did you find that there was attorneys that wanted to work for the agency, that was interested actually in the agency?
Yes, there were. There were indeed. And a lot of young idealistic people, and I can remember when we, back then we were in the hippie age, and I can remember Governor Ford one time talking to me. He said, Will Hoyt, I know you can't get them to cut their hair, but could you at least get them to wear shoes in the Capitol? I'll try, Governor. But yeah, and in the counties, we didn't have any trouble. The pay wasn't great. There was also a system that some counties had for a fairly long time where if you defended a criminal, if you didn't have a plan, in effect, the circuit judge would approve what you got paid. You would submit to him. And then the circuit judge would submit it to me, and I would have to approve it yet again. That got to be kind of burdensome, and that made me hustle even harder to get these plans in effect. But the most they could get would be $500 for a misdemeanor and $1,000 for a felony. And they could get $30 an hour for in-court time and $20 an hour for out-court time. And up to $500 for a misdemeanor and $1,000 for a felony. Now, where they had a plan, you know, they had a pot of money that they divided up however the people in the plan decided. They said, but I always thought maybe you could have kept some of the old system if you had just gotten more money appropriated. Because, well, the young lawyers and some of the old lawyers who had been taking indigent cases, all of a sudden they're going to get paid. Maybe it's only $1,000 for a felony, but they were getting nothing before. So there was a lot of interest. And a lot of corporate, the Kentucky Bar Association, very supportive, very supportive. And of course, some of the lawyers in the various plans around the state were some of the leaders in the Kentucky Bar Association. So actually, they were going to be, if I ever needed people to testify before any hearings or anything, hey, just call them up and they're right there. What do you need, Tony?
And when you say the new and old system, just to clarify, the new system, we have full-time employees. And
Yeah, it's a totally, I wouldn't begin to know how to oversee a system like this. It's a big job.
In terms of keeping accurate case records, how did you all do it?
Well, you mean in our office or out in the field?
Both. I mean, if you know how they went about keeping them out in the field, too.
Well, in the field, they kept records and submitted to me of the cases they handled, what kind of felony, misdemeanor, that sort of thing. We, of course, kept all of our files. And one thing that kind of, when I went to the NLADA thing, that got me a little puzzled is they were talking about you could only have so many cases and this, that, and the other. Well, nobody back then, I'm sure they've got it now, and we didn't because we didn't have the time, frankly, to develop it. We were too busy doing the work. All of a sudden, we're handling appeals 3 or 4 weeks after we hired the secretary. We're out trying cases, and we had to go to the prisons. We didn't get to do it, but nobody had developed a weighted caseload. And so, you know, say, you can only handle 500 misdemeanors a year if you're probably. You could handle 25 DUIs in a day if you did it right. You know, as a county attorney, I knew that. I knew, you know, most of the time there's no defense. You're working out a plea bargain. You make sure that everything was done right. If it is, and your client tell you, yeah, Tony, I was drunker than a skunk. What are you going to do? And as county attorney, I dealt with those, so I knew that just cases don't mean anything. It's weighted cases. And you get one bad felony, and it could take you a month or 6 weeks. So, you know, so, but we never were able to do that. We made fits and starts, but we couldn't. We just didn't have the time.
You mentioned earlier you went to a national meeting. What other type of national organizations, public defender, did you get involved in?
Well, back then, Kentucky kind of got the reputation of having a good system. And so I was called to Rutgers, I remember, in New Jersey to talk at a symposium from people, and I think the state of New Jersey was getting ready to do something. I remember the Chief Justice of Alabama called me down there, and he later became the United States Senator from Alabama, and asked me to help them organize there. And then I went out to California, and they were having something. But, you know, I was too busy to do a whole lot of that. And what I did was, when I'd go to these places, I would tell my wife, grab the kids and we'll get in the station wagon and drive. Now, the one to California we didn't drive to, but that'll be our vacation those 3 days. But so other than that, I can't say that we, you know, we didn't do a whole lot nationally. But we did gain some national recognition.
When this all started, the statute to create the public defender program, who was the key players? I know Governor Ford, obviously, but who else was key players in getting that passed?
Well, I'm trying to remember. And of course, it's a different world now that you live in. The key player in getting that passed was Governor Ford. Mm-hmm. Because back then, the governor pretty well, you know, worked things out so that his legislation got passed. I can remember a young man I had taught in high school, later became Speaker of the House, Bill Kenton. Bill was very much in favor of this bill, and he was in the House of Representatives then. And
what about Larry Greathouse and Skip Grafton?
Skip Grafton was certainly pushing for the enactment of this legislation. And they had tried to get, before Ford was governor, I recall just vaguely, they had tried to get a full-time public defender system in Louisville. And they didn't get it. I think it didn't get past the governor, but that would have been Governor Nunn. Larry Greathouse, I worked with Larry only when he was in the governor's office. And the system could not have had a stronger backer than Larry Greathouse. And Larry smoothed a lot of roads for me and would make phone calls if I was having some difficulty in arranging local officials to meet with me. Larry got it done for me. And he really, it couldn't have been done without Larry's help and Governor Ford's. I mean, Governor Ford took a personal interest in the public defender system.
I know he came and spoke twice, I think. What was
he did.
About the public defender system? What did he have to say? How was that?
Well, just basically what he had said all along, how important it was and how important the job that the people were doing, and just urging them to keep in there. And he seemed, as I say, other than some of my employees not wearing shoes in the Capitol, he seemed always to be very pleased with the way things were being handled and with the way the people were. And I can't think of any place that we had any real trouble. You know, occasionally I would have to call down in one of the counties and say, well, so-and-so says he's been in the county jail for 3 weeks and no public defenders come to see him. And, I'll get on that, Tony, and then I'd get a call back immediately and say, well, you know, he's not indigent. That's why nobody's been, they're on the farm out here or something like that. And occasionally someone slipped through. And Lord knows we made mistakes, too. Mm-hmm. And then we also, we set up, I tell you, nationally, got a grant from LEAA, Law Enforcement Assistance. Let's see. Law Enforcement Assistance Administration. We had back then a crime commission. And that, by the way, it was made up. They had a courts committee of it, And then they had one for prisons and things like that, corrections. And these were various committees with all the top people in the state were appointed by the governor to these things. And they administered law enforcement assistance administration money. And I never will forget, there were some people from northern Kentucky wanting to get some stuff for their police. And just to show you that we didn't really have enemies, you would think, well, there goes the money. We actually beat them out and got a, I think it was a $100,000 grant. And that let me set up some post-conviction relief folks to go to the prisons and help there. Surprisingly, we almost never had any coming out of the women's prison for some reason. I've never understood that. Mm-hmm. But those ladies never seemed to have the problems that we had down in Eddyville and LaGrange. It also let me establish some investigators for our people. So that if that was one thing where we were a little shy on. And then later we established some regional offices where we put a lawyer who could serve as backup or fill in if there were conflicts. Plus he would have a couple of investigators down there with him. And they were available to any lawyer in the system. Now, under the law, we had the same right to use the crime lab as the prosecutor did. And those folks were good, very professional. And I never was uncomfortable about using them for anything that this will leak to the prosecution or something. Never happened. Never happened. And we had our own polygraph man, who was one of our investigators, and he had left the state police and was considered to be the best polygraph examiner in the state of Kentucky.
Was that Les Mahoney?
Yeah. And we would go down. I learned that sometimes you couldn't always believe at LaGrange, at Eddyville, the first summer I was public defender, there were no lawyers down there who could defend. There was only the city attorney and the county attorney. Well, back then the city attorney was a prosecutor, and so was the county attorney. And so we went down and stayed first at the Contiki Motel, which is still there. I can't believe it. I drove through there a couple of years ago. And then later we rented a cabin at Kentucky Lake and brought a couple of our investigators down, a couple of other lawyers. But we handled not only the crimes coming out of the prison, but started getting appointed to the crimes in Lyon County because they didn't have a public defender. And I tell you how naive I was, I got appointed to a murder case. And a murder had taken place at a bootlegger's, which had a neon sign. It was out in the country in Lyon County. And my client told me that if I would interview this one witness, he would prove that it was self-defense because the evidence seems to be that my client was the aggressor. So I found out that the guy worked at a tie factory in Paducah. So I went to Paducah checking with all the clothing companies. And finally somebody said, "Tie factory, that's railroad ties." So it was a hot day, not quite as hot as this, and I had a white suit. And I went walking this back in this railroad yard, and every step I took, all this black coal dust came. So from knees down, my white suit was black. But I interviewed the guy at some length, and he said, "Now, I'm planning on leaving Kentucky. I'm getting out of here. Is that a problem?" I said, "Well, has the Commonwealth subpoenaed you? Has anybody subpoenaed you to testify?" He said, "No, sir." I said, "No problem to me. The sooner you leave, good." Because he was going to really put my client in the soup. But we had things like that, and we got those things going up. You know, it was back then, it was pretty much a 6.5-day job, a week job. In the first 6 or 8 months.
You mentioned post-conviction starting up and investigation and regional offices. Do you remember some of the people that...
I cannot remember the names. Dave Norrat, I remember. But Dave came in later, I think.
Did you have Bill Ayer head up post-conviction?
May have. I cannot remember this. That's one of the things. Some of these things, I just... That was a lot of blur. You know, you're running around, you're doing this, doing that. I can remember taking some, but that was the younger, Tim Riddell. You know, Tim did a lot of post-conviction stuff. I sent Tim down there one time, and Tim had long hair. And this was in eastern Kentucky, and we were defending some people. I think it was in Whitesburg. He was on the Virginia line, and I told Tim he had to get his hair cut. Oh, I get my hair cut? Yeah, I'll see you. I said, Tim, you can't become the issue. Make a long story short, he got trimmed up. A year later, we were down in eastern Kentucky, and long hair was in. Everybody had long hair, and here we were, Bob. I mean, we told Tim he needs to grow his hair. Well, he had grown it back. But, oh, boy.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Bradshaw versus Ball?
Well, I wasn't in on that at all. And I was just aware of it because I guess every lawyer was aware that that had gone up to the Court of Appeals. And what Judge Meigs had done here in Frankfurt, that he'd ordered that they be paid. And he had determined that it was a necessary governmental expense. And because, well, you know, Section 11 of the Constitution says everybody's entitled to a lawyer. And it then went to the Court of Appeals. And my hero, Judge Reed, whom I later, when I was on the Court of Appeals, and he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, we shared office spaces. And he was kind of my mentor and taught me more law than I learned in law school. But Judge Reed wrote the opinion, and they ruled that lawyers had to be paid, but that it wasn't, that there was going to have to be provision for it by the General Assembly, that it wasn't the kind of expense that the court could order the treasurer to pay it. That it was, in that sense, it wasn't that kind of necessary governmental expense. So now, while that case was pending, I guess the statute was passed. It was long in that time. I remember all this stuff was going on, and everybody was talking about it.
What are you most proud of accomplishing during your tenure? What would you say?
Getting it going and not dying. No, I think proudest accomplishment is I think we did what we set out to do, and we created a statewide criminal defense law firm that gave indigent defendants good defense. And you know, at one time we were winning even on appeal about 1 out of 4, which was pretty darn good. So I'm proud of that. And I think we also improved the practice of criminal law in the state. And it was a training ground for young lawyers, which they don't have now. If you go out in some of these small counties now, and let's say you're not indigent, you're middle class, and you want to hire a lawyer, you're not going to find many lawyers who know a lot about criminal law. And that, I think we created a whole bunch of young folks who knew how to practice criminal law and were there because, you know, they were just doing this part-time, so they were there for paying clients, too. So I guess that's the thing I'm most proud of.
Do you have some thoughts, Tony, on the Louisville and Lexington public defender programs in those early years that had... I believe Louisville, maybe under your tenure, moved to a full-time system,
yeah.
And I think Lexington had maybe part-time.
It was mixed. I think they had a full-time director in Lexington at the time, and they had part-time lawyers, and then they started getting a few full-time lawyers in Lexington. Louisville, they had a great program from day one. And I attribute a lot of that to the quality of the lawyers they were able to get, and Paul Tobin, who was the director down there, very practical, retired Army guy, I think, and very practical guy. And I think Paul and I only had, we never really argued, but he used to give, what did he call it? Whenever they would get somebody turned loose, he would give an award. The Walker or something like that.
That's what it was, the Walker Award.
The Walker Award. He said, I ought to do that. And I said, that's all I need to do. I said, we want to do our job, but I don't want people thinking I'm congratulating folks for getting criminals free. But we did celebrate in the office.
Do you recall who you worked with in Lexington?
I remember it was Russ. When did Russ Baldoni come in there?
He was later.
I can't remember who was. I tell you, Scotty Basler was one of them. At that time, Scotty was doing it. We had good lawyers in Lexington. And I remember even people like Harry Miller would fill in and do stuff.
And then, do you recall ever testifying before the General Assembly?
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it just, in interim hearings and things over budgets, and I would get asked questions about how things were going, and just some of the usual questions, but nothing where I thought they were trying to sharpshoot me or anything like that. And I made it a point, because I'd seen some other people's mess up, and I saw some later mess up. When I went to testify, I went in one person, because some of these bureaucrats would come in with this array of people, and they'd say, well, now, Mr. Wilhoit, I see here you've got 5 or 6 people. Who's doing the state's business? So I was bound to determine whether to do that. But I never saw any hostility from any legislator. Sometimes some close questions about what we were doing.
Do you recall particular supporters in those early years in the General Assembly?
See, I'm getting it confused with when we started the Court of Appeals, yeah, and all that kind of bleeds together.
Yeah. How about, did you go over and testify on substantive criminal law bills, or did you just testify on budget issues?
Generally, back then, what we would do is, the governor's office would send us criminal law bills, and we would have 48 hours in which to get back all of our comments. Then, if it looked like there was going to be some problem, then we would be brought in to testify before the legislative committee. I can remember when they did the what do we call our criminal law now?
Penal code.
The penal code. David Merle and I rented 2 rooms at a hotel, a motel here in Frankfort, the one that used to be on the way going to Louisville, and stayed up all day and all night getting the comments on the penal code back, and some of which they didn't catch because there were some parts of it that they hadn't provided punishments for. Because I'm a whole common law guy, and I didn't see a whole lot of good in the penal code.
Do you recall testifying on the penal code?
Yes,
I do. Do you recall any?
Very briefly, and just on what the effect it would do, and from our perspective, not whether it was good or bad law. Mm-hmm. I think that decision had been made. I wasn't called in for that purpose.
Other things that we want to know from you about our history?
I can't think of anything. I just wish I could remember some of the names of the people, because they were without a doubt the hardest working, most dedicated bunch of people I've ever worked with.
You said there were 5 names given to the governor. Do you recall the other 4?
I do not. I was surprised when I was picked, frankly. But I had known the governor and been active in his campaign when he ran for office.
And then you left the department
to run for political office.
And can you talk a little bit about that decision?
Well,
what political office?
I'll be honest.
A little bit about your subsequent career.
I decided what I wanted to do more than anything was to be a judge. That's what I decided after I'd been in public defender's office, that I could probably get the most accomplished by being a judge. And Judge Reed was our judge, and this was before we had the Supreme Court. The Court of Appeals was the top court. And he was our judge, and I wanted to succeed Judge Reed. I would never, ever run against Judge Reed, but I knew it wouldn't be many years before he would be retired. So I decided the best way to do that would be to be Attorney General. And then, after being Attorney General, to run if Judge Reed had retired. And everything was indicating that he might. As it turns out, he retired, but he went to the federal bench. So anyway, the then Governor Carroll, urged me not to run for Attorney General because he had to support somebody else. And he said, I'd rather you wouldn't. And he said, and I told him what my plan was, and he said, well, Tony, I'll appoint you to the Court of Appeals if the constitutional article passes, and laughed. And I said, Governor, that's got as much chance of passing as, what's his name from Louisville, has of beating you. And we both laughed about it. And he said, well, I'm sorry. To make a long story short, in spite of my not taking his advice, after I ran and lost, I got a letter from him asking me to see his secretary for an appointment, that he knew I had all those hungry mouths to feed, and he was had a job for me. And so I made an appointment, went to see him, and he appointed me Deputy Secretary of Justice, awaiting Jack Smith coming back from Washington. So I took over the Justice Department for a few months. And you never forget, he said, now, what does the Attorney General make? And I told him, I think it was $22.5 at that time. And he said, well, you call Bob Stevens right now and tell him I'm going to pay you $1,000 more. I just laughed, and he made me call Bob and tell him that. I said, but Bob laughed, too.
And Bob Stevens is who you ran against in the
primary. Yeah, and that's who Governor Carroll had supported and didn't
run against.
Were there
other people in the primary?
Yeah, there was a fellow from West Kentucky whose name I cannot remember to save me. But then by and by, the Court of Appeals, you know, the constitutional article passed, and I was one of the three nominees that went to the governor, but one of those nominees was Ed Pritchard, and I assumed he would get it because he had the finest mind I believe I've ever encountered, legally and otherwise. And he called me one night. He said, Tony, I want you to know I've just called the governor and asked him to appoint you. And I said, why, Mr. Pritchard? And he said, well, I didn't want to get into a political campaign and bring up all of them. And I said, Mr. Pritchard, I will be your chairman, and we will carry every county in this district. He said, no, it's final. The next day, Jack White called me and said, the governor's going to appoint you. So I was, after that, my colleagues referred to me as his accidency.
And this would have been what year?
This would have been, when the court, 76?
76. And you were on the Court of Appeals then?
Till a little over 20 years, almost 22 years.
And you became Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals, approximately?
They made me take it the last couple of years. They couldn't find a fish.
And then you retired from the Court of Appeals, and then what did you?
They retired very briefly, and Bruce Lester, who had been on the Court of Appeals with me, was chairman of the Legislative Ethics Commission, and he called me and said, well, what, I got a job for you. I said, oh, no. He said, now, you've been living off the taxpayers for 30 years, not doing any work. Now you can come do some work for a change. And that's how I went to Legislative Ethics.
And so you're the, you, what year would you have become the Executive Director of Legislative Ethics?
Been 98, 97, well, late 97.